The Guardian.
I came across a quote that I couldn't get out of my head as someone that was about to interview you. It's a Melody Maker interview from 1991. Wow. And it said, Jason Pierce is the man who makes Marcel Marceau seem positively gobby. That's very good.
Yeah. What can I say? Not much.
Do you think that's an unfair assessment of your character?
I should try and talk a lot now. Not really, but a lot of... I love music. I think it's really, really important. And a lot of the press and the kind of media of music is kind of really throwaway, like jokes, like what's your favourite fruit, unless that's one of your questions, but I just did that in the last interview, and it's this kind of, like, just junk. And I kind of refuse to talk about it, so it's hard to sort of try and compare yourself to somebody so famous, isn't it?
And silent. Could mime the rest of the interview, it'll be great. Because I suspected at that time, I thought, well, perhaps that Spaceman 3 had finished and you'd moved on to Spiritualize, that suddenly the onus was on you, and that perhaps that made you feel uncomfortable.
It's
that
not
you
just
had...
that. I've got to front it. It's my work or whatever, but I've got no desire to be like that, you know. It's not really about me. It's about the music. It's about the music I make. And also, what's really odd as well is, as the music gets older, the stories, everything we talk about now, it becomes even less. You know, they're just footnotes. They're just tiny stories for people who are interested in the stories behind music. But most people who listen to music... then we're not historians. You listen to music in the way it affects you. When I was a kid, I loved Search and Destroy by Iggy and the Stooges, which is apparently about Vietnam. But how could it mean anything about Vietnam to me? I come from a small town in the middle of England, and I'm not saying, oh, this must be what it was like to live in America in 1969 or whatever. You relate it to the way, the energy it gives you and the mood it puts you in. And I say this every interview, but when you listen to Ray Charles singing I Can't Stop Loving You, there isn't a soul who says, who is it that Ray can't stop loving here? You know, you relate that to your life and your experience. Also, there's a very weird time lag in music, in that we're really talking about ideas I had about 3 years ago. And now the record's out, people want to talk about it, so it just seems...
What you're talking about a lot there is interpretation. How people interpret you. And one of the things that people have been saying about your new album is probably connected to the fact they don't realise that it was all recorded before your illness, and so that they're interpreting it by events that happened after it was written. Is that right?
Yeah, a little. I guess I don't know. I think... Am I still on the Marceau question? I can't stop people interpreting things how they want to interpret them, and I haven't got any lines that I can say, no, you should listen to it like this or you should hear it like this, because everybody's experience to music is unique, you know. So it doesn't come with any kind of agenda and saying, right, this is for this time in your life or whatever. I think it doesn't matter if you don't get it at all, you know. There's loads of music that I've bought that doesn't make any sense, and then 10 years later it will make every sense to me. So it's just this...
What I wanted to get at was that, for example, you had an album out in 2007 called Guitar Loops that, compared to this current album, was not really reported or talked about very much. So would you say that it's the backstory of this album that has attracted people more than the actual music?
There's a thing. No, I think that... maybe some, but also this is a Spiritualized record, and Spiritualized is about, it's not just me, it's everybody else who's involved in that and everybody's contribution to that, and the whole thing is a kind of different, you know, just the level of I guess there's some expectation anyway to do with it, but also the whole level of the kind of shows that I want to put on, that even when we didn't have the audience, I was spending the money on putting on bigger and better shows, and it's always been about this thing that we can take this as far out as we possibly can. Guitar Loops was me kind of exploring a music that was immediate, that was about me just trying to improvise and trying, and you can't rehearse that, you can't put that together with it, you can't even say, well, I need some money to do this, it's an improvised thing. And it was never meant as that kind of release.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the early period of Spiritual Eyes, because obviously I've never interviewed you before, so there's some things that I wanted to ask. And one of the other quotes from this Melody Maker interview is, I didn't want people to think that Spiritual Eyes happened because I was dissatisfied with Spaceman 3. And so why did Spiritual Eyes happen?
I can't. I'm answering. These are all defensive questions, aren't they? First of all, I have to defend myself.
That's not how they're intended.
Then I have to defend myself, my music against the story behind the music.
No, it was more. You know what? That was actually meant to be positive. You know, rather than something, you have this band that comes out of the disintegration of another band for you, yeah, to say that, actually.
That band wasn't. Spaceman wasn't working. But musically it was great, and it's this idea that people think that they start things new to distance themselves from old things. And my thing with music had always been that we were never going to tread water, we were going to just force this thing wherever it could go and sort of find out what kind of spaces and areas in music it could get to. And I guess, with what little memory I have for that particular Melody Maker interview, that I was trying to say that I wasn't doing this to distance myself from everything I'd done before or to say that wasn't working, because musically it was exactly where I wanted to be. It's just that it had gotten too difficult to be in that band. And although people were kind of saying we should keep the band together because it means something and it's the names, that meant nothing to me. I wasn't going to carry on doing anything. I think money should be the last motivation, or the fact that it has... success, in inverted commas, this kind of idea of success in music. So it was important to say that then.
Do you look back on that period with fondness? Are you proud of the things that you achieved?
I think I'm proud of all of that, you know. And I was thinking recently that good records kind of warp time, you know, that you can lose yourself in a 40-minute recording for days or years, you know, and it speeds up time, it gives you energy or lays you back. And so they're like these little time capsules that when you get them right, then they're these weird little environments that people can lose themselves in. And I think it's really special. And I think now people are saying, but why are you still doing that? It's like everybody's doing downloads, everybody's attention span is short. And I'm kind of like, I think it's weird to make things specifically for the point or the medium with which you try to sell them. It's the same thing with like making records for radio. Like they've got a kind of tinny sound and they'll sound good on the radio. It's like, I always thought they just played records. They didn't make them for that medium. And the same with downloads. It's kind of like, how short are these attention spans? Do they just want the chorus or just the first few bars? You know, that's not what I do. I make albums. I make, like, you can read an excerpt from a book in a newspaper, but you can't deny that it's from a bigger piece. Or you can buy a detail of the Michelangelo, the fingers nearly touching, you know, and it's a really beautiful piece, but it's a detail. And I think all of these records kind of found their space where they seem to work and seem to have as much of that kind of energy and that kind of feeling as they could.
How do you feel about the idea of people downloading songs from A&E? Because listening to it as an album, it's very clearly laid out to be heard in that sequence, the songs linked to each other. That if someone was to just go to LimeWire and put in Spiritual Eyes and grab a few songs, does that make you feel like they're not?
I've got no problem with that. I didn't say that I disagree with that, but if people, you know, people have always taken favourite tracks or favourite lyrics, you know, that the idea of kind of trying to produce things for that you no longer make things. See, albums work more like novels, that there's threads between things, or in my world they do, you know. They're not a collection of 11 of the latest songs, you know, or here's a couple of good songs and a whole couple of other songs we had to write to make this thing. There's a thread and there's a kind of atmosphere, there's a kind of things later will relate to things earlier, and that's just what I do. I can't, you know.
Did you enjoy making this album?
Good question. At times.
And when you found it not enjoyable, was it because outside influence was trying to make it radio friendly, or just because
there's no influence like that. It's just not an easy. I found it quite harrowing that the songs did relate I originally wrote the album as with characters almost, that I wasn't writing specifically about me, so it broadened what I could write about. And then it was quite harrowing that they seemed like there was some kind of, that they'd sort of prophesied my illness and whatever, which I had to get over. And also, they sounded, when I came back to work on them, they didn't sound contemporary. I don't mean contemporary music in a musical world, just contemporary to my life. It was like I was working on something that was an old collection. And at times it seemed marginally less difficult to work on them and try and find a way to finish them than to throw them away. And there's something really important and very difficult about throwing away a year and a half of work, you know. And then when I was really low, I met Harmony Korine, who is a very beautiful and very crazy guy. And he asked me to do some film music for his new film. And he put me in a studio where I was working with just sound, just music. And I didn't have to front it. I didn't have to think about what I was trying to do. I didn't have to explain, this is my new project, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And it was hugely liberating. And while I was doing that, I thought, because this was going so well, I ran my album at the same time. And they bled into each other, so the film got inside of the album and bits of my album got inside the film. And it gave my album a kind of atmosphere. It sort of found this environment that made my record become contemporary again, or contemporary to me. And also, it seemed like if this crazy man that has just got all these amazing, wonderful ideas and all this, it seemed like his undertaking was vast compared with mine. You know, he was doing a film where the music to his film is by its very nature incidental, and all I had to deal with was 11 songs. So it gave me a kind of perspective on my record that made it easier to finish it.
Before I listened to it, I think I expected it to be maybe a little bit more morbid, but from the...
Was that what you wanted?
That's what I want. That's the only thing I like in music. Because of your illness, and because, is it going to be very clinical? Is it going to be very soul-searching? It actually feels just like an incredibly positive album from someone with a lot of life force in them.
Yeah, but it wasn't... It was written before, and... You know, you say, was it easy to make it? They're not easy to make, because I have to try. I can almost say that... I know that album's right because I ran controls while I was making it. So every mix I did, I did a mix that sounded like Phil Spector or these huge... So I know, but I know that it doesn't work like that. And I've got this thing where if the song's out of time, I don't mind spending a week and a half putting it in time to know that it doesn't actually work like that. But even some of the things like Death Take Your Fiddle was written... It sounds kind of dumb because I think about the first line, it doesn't sound like the most positive of lines, but it was written, pride isn't the right word, but it was written more from that perspective, that it came with this kind of, life really isn't worth living unless you're close to death. It puts this massive, important thing to life. Like, Ladies and Gentlemen, We're Floating in Space, it was like, it's a really obvious line and we really are. But a lot of people want to kind of hunker down and say, I don't want to deal with that, that's too big, you know, I want to do my little things here. So they were written from a completely different kind of viewpoint. They weren't meant to be, even the accordion that's played on that, that sounds like breathing, there's some kind of, it's not humour, but there's something in that that makes it...
An acceptance of something?
I don't know, I just think it's... Yeah, then they're sort of mixed with this sort of pride and regret and all this kind of thing that's to do with life, that it's like, they're not meant to be, what was your word, morbid, because life's great, you know?
Okay, there's two things that I wanted to ask you, so you can decide which one you want to answer. One is, I've always wanted to know if you had a religious upbringing, and the other one is, I wanted to know whether having children changed the way you felt about life.
Can I do the first?
Yes.
No.
Not even a little.
No, not really. Only through kind of school and stuff like that.
Because I think a lot of the spiritualized stuff, it just feels that there's a lot of religious imagery there. It's spectral.
I love gospel music. I love this kind of idea of truth in music. So much popular music is people copying other people's style or take or dress or whatever and passing it off as their own. And I love this idea that there's kind of music that's made by people who are saying, this is where I stand and this is how important this is to me. And gospel music, by its very nature, is infused with that, you know, because it's people who believe and they're singing about that belief. And it's really hard to stand in front of a gospel choir and not feel that. So I just love that sound, you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with infusing your own music with the musics that you love, you know. I wasn't brought up in America in 1940, but I can take bits of that music and bits of those ideas, because as much as I'm kind of trying to forge my own music ahead, the whole of music is doing that as well, you know. And that's a kind of background to it. So also somebody levelled at me recently that they're saying, well, if your body moves to gospel music and your heart feels it or whatever, maybe you do believe, but your brain is kind of like trying to intellectualise that. And I said, well, it's not God's music. It's not made by God. It's made by people who believe in God, and it's a different thing, you know.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.